Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, we're going to fat shame, folks. We normally don't.
We don't normally fat shame,
but I will.
I kind of do.
I will make exception whenever the guy that we're going to fat shame is a fat fuck ISIS guy.
Oh, okay.
If you're a fat fuck ISIS guy, you're getting these, I guess we'll call them podcast hands.
Right.
We'll give you these podcast vocals.
Round number two, we're going to invite on Congressman Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin's 8th District. He's going to come in and talk about a bunch of different shit that in a politician way.
But where, namely, the Packers loss.
The Packers loss. He's going to talk about some of the threats that are going on in China, the cyber threats, being married to a Broadway host, like all kinds of
a singer, like all kinds of stuff.
So we're going to talk about that with him. And then the story that's taking military veteran Twitter by storm. In round number three, we're going to get on with the war on drugs. We invited Thomas Marriott, who is the guy behind the change.org petition there. He's going to come on the show and tell us why, even though I made fun of him on the blog on BarstoolSports.com. I wrote a blog pretty much just making fun of him, like the entire thing. He was still nice enough. He reached out. I actually didn't talk to him about this in the interview. While I wrote the blog, he found my email address and was kind of like, hey, this is actually a worthwhile time, fella. So we invited him on the show to let him give his spiel
here. War on drugs medal.
And then finally, round number four, we are going to talk about how cold it is right now, because how cold is a working party?
Ice cold!
The Canadian military has been mobilized to the farthest reaches of Newfoundland to dig people out from a historic snowstorm. And if you haven't seen those pictures, it is unbelievable. We're going to do all that right now. And today's episode is going to be brought to you by our good new friends. They're our best new friends that we've ever had on the show, and they are Hawthorne. Hawthorne is this, if you've never tried it, have you ever tried it before you tried it here?
Not before here, no. It's unbelievable, though.
Neither. Have you tried it? Have you got your sample yet?
I ordered a full one. I gave most of it to Bren because it's for more of the dudes, but I did keep one of the colognes. Smelled so good to me that I kept it, and I actually sprayed it on myself this morning. I think it's cool.
I'm wearing
it
today.
I think it's cool when ladies wear cologne sometimes, and I actually really love it. It's the one called Play.
I love the Play one. Yeah, that's what I have too.
I've been wearing it right now. I was wearing
the work one, so there's work and Play, the work one, A+. Yep.
Yeah, so let me set the scene for you a little bit. Whenever you go into their website, you go to Hawthorne.co, and you're going to pick all kinds of different things. It's like, oh, do you like to go out to the club? Do you like to go to a lounge? Do you like watching games? Do you like doing Netflix at home? Whatever you like, and you pick on that. And then it's like, do you like to take a shower? Do you like to take a bath? And you pick all these different options. And by the time you're done, they have formulated this entire scent package for you that smells good for you.
Right.
Like my shampoo that I pick out is going to be different than Brent's. And for people who have dry skin like me, they ask you what kind of skin you have. Do you have dry skin? Do you have wet skin, oil skin, whatever kind of skin you got? And then it comes in this super nice box.
The packaging is just so crisp and clean. It looks amazing.
I had a hard time handing it over to
Brent. It's fancy boy stuff.
Yeah, I was excited to use it just by the packaging. I was like, ooh, this is going to be good. And I even had someone compliment me on Saturday. Like, wow, man, you smell really good. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. It's a new scent.
Same.
I've been huffing myself all day.
So I think in my package I got deodorant. I got
the deodorant's awesome too.
Roll-on, by the way, revolutionary.
Yeah, and I got that one. It tells you what kind of pits you got. Your concern going to be smelling good, dry, semi-dry, and smelling good? Like, you have all these different options. You got to check it out. Hawthorne.co, and you could check it out, and you're going to get 10% off if you use the code ZERO. ZERO is the code, 10% off. This morning when I was on a plane, there are some issues that I had, first of all, on the plane.
Seems like you have a lot of issues when you travel.
I usually don't. Usually it's very seamless because I plan. Like, Kate, Cons, Brent, you guys know I am planned out. I don't do things, like, haphazardly. Like, especially when it comes to being on time. I'm always on time. I'm punctual. So when I set, like, Uber, I wanted Uber to pick me up just like it has hundreds of other times.
So you scheduled an Uber.
Scheduled an Uber.
I've never done that. How does that work
typically? Normally, great. So I go into the app. It's 5:15 is when I wanted to, or 4:15 is when I wanted to leave my house because my flight, I was supposed to board at 5:30, take off at 6. So I was going to get to the airport at 5:15-ish. Mm-hmm. And normally, whenever I get there, I have clear me. So I just go through. It takes me 2 minutes to go through security. It takes me no time. I give myself 30 minutes because I want to shit. Honestly, I have to shit before I go on a flight or else I'll be paranoid. Even if I don't have to go, I want to go.
30 minutes is nowhere near enough time for myself. I like to get to an airport minimum hour before my flight, maybe hour and a half actually.
So Uber sends me the notification that my flight is this morning. It's going to be here, or my ride is going to be ready this morning. It wasn't ready. The time for them to show up at my house happened. There was not even a notification that the ride was on the way. So I'm sitting there freaking out, and I can't call Lyft. The nearest Lyft is 17 minutes away because I live like out of San Antonio proper. So I have to wait at my house. And so I'm sitting there fucking steaming mad in my office, sitting on my ottoman, completely dressed, ready to go, have all my bags ready to go at the time that Uber was going to do it. And I'm sitting there like, fuck, son of a bitch, I just want to leave. So I have to hop into my truck and I drive myself to the airport. Think, no, you guys knowing me, imagine how mad I am.
Oh, yeah.
At this moment, I'm like gripping the steering wheel of my 250.
Yeah, and everyone knows you should drive in that kind of state.
Too early in the morning to be that mad, too. Like,
you're right, and it starts your day off so shitty.
Yeah. It just sets the tone for the week sometimes.
And all my medicine, like my antidepressant medicine that I've been on, it's been working so great. I've been in such a good mood. And to be put in the sour sack of a mood by them, and then I get on the plane. I make it there.
So wait, are you leaving your car? Is Annalise going to pick up your car?
I'm going to leave it at the airport. But I say all this because,
it's on the tarmac.
As you all know, I am a man of integrity. Would you say that?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you pay up your bets.
I pay my bets. Yes. I do my thing. I have broken a promise to the listener.
Oh, you ran to catch your flight.
If you work at San Antonio Airport, please pull the security footage.
We need it immediately.
You know, it's so fucked up that that joke is so fucked up. When I have my two bags, I'm carrying my carry-on and my duffel bag in my hand. I'm running through the airport, and I'm thinking, the listener! I'm breaking a promise to the listener.
Yeah.
I'm like out of breath going through the clear me thing. The guy's like, what's going on? I was like, the fucking Uber didn't show up. Like, he knows the story. And the TSA guy's just like, that happens from time to time. I'm like, does it? It's never happened to me before.
Oh, my God.
I was very upset. So then I'm flying. And I always pay for the internet when I'm flying because I just am bored all the time. So I just want to fuck around on Twitter basically because I'm addicted to Twitter.
Sure.
And I'm going through and I see pictures that cheer me up right away. When I'm sitting in 7D, sitting there at 7D, and I go through some pictures. And it is of the Virginia Courthouse in Richmond.
Right.
And it is just boot after boot after boot,
now,
wearing as much gear as they possibly can.
Just totally geared out. Just nowhere in any reg would these people fall. But how many of these people do you think have any sort of prior service?
Oh, I bet a lot. Well, I would bet a lot of them do.
Old context Katie over here, thousands. They say over 20,000 people attended a gun rights rally.
Oh, wow.
Today.
I didn't realize it was that many.
Yes. So thousands of gun rights activists and other groups have crowded the streets around Virginia's capital to protest plans by the state's Democratic leadership to pass gun control legislation. So people came from, I was looking at the coverage today, from all over the country to this. And hey, protest, do your thing. But right, left, 2A, not 2A, you have to absolutely roast the fuck out of these people that show up dressed like, it's like military cosplay.
It really
is.
That's exactly what it is.
There is guys with like, and
there's a dude with a Barrett 50 cal.
There's a guy walking around with a 50 cal, and it's like, he's like the dorkiest fucking guy on the planet.
He's overweight.
There's people with like,
nothing wrong with that.
There's people with strings hanging off their belts with like speed reload, like metal speed reloader for like plastic magazines that actually doesn't really work together.
The Barrett guy had his Barrett 50 cal with 5.56 magazine holes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
like,
insane.
What are you going to do? You can't even reload that thing.
It is like 20,000 people, and there's normal people there too, but there was an endless amount of people who looked like they just raided the nearest Army Navy store,
grabbed whatever they
could, and they're like, "This is what mother, I'm back from military.
It's from Army."
It is.
It was just like an amalgamation of a lot of different branches and things they've seen in movies and pictures along the way, because they just thrown all together. That's why I think not all of them had to have been in the military prior. Because I think if you were at least in the military,
oh no,
you would have some semblance of what right looks like.
I bet some of these The biggest dorks are absolutely military.
Some of them, yeah, but I think a lot of these people are just gun people.
I think it's probably an even combination of both. I think that you're going to have some that are in there. But some of them, man, it's just, why are you doing this?
Why?
And there's nothing wrong. Like, there's plenty of people who listen to this show that love guns and love going out and shoot guns. And there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. Like, going out and doing and exercising your rights and doing all that stuff. But with anything, when you take it to that level, you look like a fucking weirdo.
Yes.
And if you can't admit that these people standing in full combat battle rattle in Richmond outside, not doing anything, just hanging out with the biggest guns on the planet, you look like a weirdo.
With the magazines, with their – they're wearing, like, the gloves that have the hardened knuckles and the hardened, like, whatever. And it's like, dude, what?
Why are you
an accountant.
Pads? Why do you have
knee pads
on?
What are you doing? There's this guy.
I'm not surprised if someone had an
accountant. Are you
going to
turkey
job?
Peek around the fucking corner with those knee pads?
There's this total dork. And, oh, my God, the patch industry right now is rolling in cash. They all have patches
with
what they think is badass sayings on it. Like, it's just absolutely ridiculous. So many, like, Semper Tyrannis. Like,
that's why I think that these folks that are at, like, this kind of spot in military people in general, there's this idea that Pinterest is just for women.
Yeah.
Pinterest is great.
Every dude that is standing in that crowd would absolutely love the quote boards that are on Pinterest.
Oh, yes. They love 100%. It.
I'm just looking at these guys. They all have, like, awfully ill-fitting khakis.
I am not the sheepdog.
They're all wearing, like, a million sheepdog patches. And then they all have, like, 1990s flak jackets on with 1980s attachments.
What?
With, like, 2000s.
Did you see the one guy? He had, like, Molly. He had Molly straps on his Kevlar.
Yes.
Why?
People had the most. It was just.
What are you attaching to
I don't know where they're getting these ideas from. So I think we can agree that it's probably, like, half and half, prior service, no service whatsoever. But I think something
100%
we can,
nerds.
That's what I was going to say. I think we can agree that there's 100% they all look like idiots.
Yeah.
I mean, absolute wild cards. And so it's been a peaceful protest, which is great. But if you're not making fun of these guys, come on.
And while they look rough, nobody look rougher than the picture that we're going to talk about in round number one.
So when I was a little kid, one of my guilty pleasures, my parents were kind of strict with what I could watch on TV. But when I was left to my own devices, Maury was, especially 90s. I grew up in the 90s. 90s Maury was my shit.
Oh, man.
Okay. And one of the episodes, it's a famous episode, and I saw it, and it's stuck in my head ever since. There's this episode where there's a very large man in his home, and Maury goes, and this was way before all those, like, my 600-pound life shows. Mm. Maury was way ahead of the curve on this. And he goes, and he, like, gets the man out of the house with, like, a crane has to come in, and they, like, tear down the wall and they crane this guy out of his house.
Dumbo?
And I was like, holy fuck balls, my little third grade voice said. I was like, holy fuck, oh my God. So that picture that scene almost exactly, except in the Middle East and with an ISIS guy. And instead of Maury, it is the Iraqi security forces that are getting this guy out of there. There is a photo of a truck bed. The truck bed is open, and there is what I thought. This is going to be mean for me. I thought, oh, ISIS is hauling potatoes around. It's not. It's a man. It looks like several sacks of potatoes because he's wearing burlap-colored velour leggings with a...
Very juicy.
Very juicy. It's
extra juicy.
Juicy on the butt. But it actually...
With pulp even.
From Jared Keller at Task and Purpose, Iraqi security forces earlier this week captured a larger-than-life ISIS official so massive that authorities were forced to haul him off in the bed of a police pickup truck after his arrest. The Iraqi government on Thursday announced the capture of ISIS Mufti Abu Abdul Bari, widely known as the terror group's very own Jabba the Hutt. Bari was captured in Mosul, the former capital of the so-called ISIS caliphate in Iraq, and according to the security forces there, he was preaching in mosques all over the city and provocative speeches against the security forces, inciting ISIS members to pledge allegiance to the extremist ideology. He is considered one of the leaders in the first row of the ISIS gangs. He's an OG ISIS fella. He's responsible for issuing fatwas related to the execution of a number of scholars and clerics who refrained from pledging allegiance to ISIS. So, very bad guy, has not only fry grease on his hands, but also blood for sure. And the photos of him, I mean...
How does this guy rise to any sort of prominence within ISIS?
And how did he hide?
Right. Well, I don't even know about hiding, because I don't think you hide when you're that large. But how does anyone take this guy serious when he says anything, when you look like that?
I would just be
laughing at him too much.
One of the things, and I know this is an audio podcast and you can't see the video, but if you get a chance, go look for a picture, because there's one picture where he is laid down on like the pillow couch kind of thing that they have in the Middle East. And his dick, I don't know where it is. Like, his legs are wide open like a starfish, and you can't see a dick anywhere. Anywhere.
Honestly.
What did he eat to gain all that much weight?
So much falafel.
I've never been to Iraq or Afghanistan, but I feel like this guy's on the heavier side of the people that live
there.
Big fried food.
I don't know. Well, they put everything in oil.
But the worst part about this guy, I don't want to spend too much time, because basically we're telling the story just so we can fat shame the shit out of this ISIS piece of shit. So the funniest part to me is that they put him in the back of a truck. He's not handcuffed or anything, because his legs are the handcuff. Like,
right.
His belly is the handcuff.
He's not going anywhere.
It's like, where are you going? Fucking nowhere. Like, you're not going anywhere. Like, where are you going, guy? You're not going anywhere. To be arrested, to be part of like the ISIS leadership and be like, we don't even need to cuff you. Flexi cuffs not needed. Where the fuck are you going, guy?
I want to know how they got him up into the back of the flatbed.
Carefully. That's what I would think.
I just love the thought of, you're an Iraqi security force member. You're on this like QRF. You get the news that we have this big target. We're going in tonight, 02. Blah, blah, blah. You go through, boom, you kick down the door, the dust clears, and you're like, oh my God. Like, I you just, like, don't expect that kind of thing. And, like, great, now who's got a haul? Whatever. And then also, I like that this guy, Bari, is responsible for issuing the fatwa to bomb the Prophet Yunus Mosque, a.k.a. the Jonah's Tomb from Jonah and the Whale stories. So, I mean, calling the kettle black here.
And,
going,
you know,
after.
We're a very anti-torture podcast, but I feel like this guy... You'd be like, hey, we'll knock off 3 years of your sentence if you let us give you the most vicious pink belly of all time.
we'll knock off 3 years of your sentence if you let us document your weight loss journey for a TLC special.
Truffle shuffle.
Yeah, do the.
Put him on Gunny Chaps' fucking workout program and put him on BCP.
I'd actually pay money to watch Jillian Michaels just lean into this guy and just make him feel horrible about himself.
I mean, look at him. He feels horrible about himself.
Yeah, that's torture in and of itself.
You don't get told that you're going in the back of the truck without feeling. that was more ruthless than anything that he's ever done to anybody else.
And also, in closing, it was actually Jerry Springer, not Maury. I don't know why I was thinking Maury.
Well, those are basically interchangeable.
There was Maury episodes, but it was the Jerry Springer one that I'm thinking of where he cranes the guy out. I just wanted to correct myself on that.
Thank you
for
that
correcting the record.
That
there.
Definitely would have made
Makes
me
a
lose
big
sleep.
Difference. Yeah. Yeah. But,
And so we're going to go from Jabba the Hutt. We're going to bring in Congressman Gallagher. Here we go. A guy who's very thin,
a attractive. Very healthy, fit. Yeah. He's the fastest man on Capitol Hill, if you listened to the last time
Suck
he was
it,
on.
ISIS.
DBT 174, if you want to hear more of this guy afterwards.
Right. Army got out as a captain?
Yes.
Is that right? Marine Corps Staff Sergeant?
Yes.
And Marine Corps Corporal.
Yeah.
Got it.
Little one on the totem pole. Yeah. Me and PFC Bren, producer first class.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No, I got promoted to Lance Corporal over the weekend. Yeah.
That's the best rank.
So he's our civilian rank.
Yeah. Did you buy a Ford Raptor after your first deployment?
I mean, I kind of play it up as a bit. Like, we did a segment last week about the most expensive thing you bought after boot camp, and I went and bought like a $250 designer jacket this week.
Yeah, he did that night.
You looked good, though.
It was very fancy.
It was very nice.
Last year, my one purchase last year was going to be the year I successfully rocked a leather jacket.
Yeah,
like,
it's tough.
Ironically,
tough thing to do.
And I spent a decent chunk of change on one, and it looked so effeminate and weird that I wore it as part of a Han Solo Halloween costume, but then I never wore it
and
again.
I'm
trying to resell it now.
That's Chaps is just getting into the boots game.
So the voice that you hear right now, because we do kind of a cold open, the voice that you hear that's not one of the normal voices.
I just admitted that on a podcast.
Yeah, the normal voice just that you kidding. Hear. The non-normal voice that you hear is Congressman Gallagher. He's back from the 8th District in Wisconsin, which is right in Green Bay, which had a rough night last night.
Rough. I got a lot of hot takes on that game.
Disappointing there. Yeah. I tweeted out last night that, you know, I'm a Jacksonville Jaguars fan, so I don't know success in the NFL or anything like that, but I'd almost rather be where I'm at than where Packer fans are at, because you guys have gone in the last really 25 years – with Super Bowl expectations.
Totally.
I have never felt that, so I never have the disappointment.
And we're 1-3 in NFC championships over the last decade. So, and I think there's also an added pressure of Aaron Rodgers is so good and so talented, even though I think he's, you know, regressed a little bit this season, that this sounds spoiled for, you know, if you're a Jaguars fan or a Redskins fan or pick your long-suffering franchise. But if you end the Rodgers era with only one Super Bowl, I do think
– oh, that's a huge disappointment.
Huge
it's like the 90s Braves.
So my – so first of all, there were did you guys see that – I think you wanted to talk about cybersecurity at some point today. Mm-hmm. Aaron Jones's Twitter got hacked earlier this – you got to look up his tweet. I forget what it was, but it was totally bizarre. And it brought in Aaron Hernandez.
Uh-oh. Oh,
and it was like – it was insane. And then he followed it up with – hey, man, I just got hacked. So who knows who did that? Could have been the Niners. Don't put it past them. Could have been the Chinese Communist Party trying to mess with me by psyching out Aaron Jones and destroying the Packers. But that was my favorite pregame storyline. And then they were doing the national anthem, and Boys to Men was singing the national anthem. Mm-hmm. I love Boys to Men.
Yeah, love Boys to Men.
My go-to karaoke song, love Boys to Men. I was so excited. And then they're all wearing Niners jerseys. And one of them said, "Go Niners" after the national anthem. So I knew it was an inauspicious day.
It's kind of weird. They're Philly being Philly guys. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Big
Motown
Niners
Philly.
Guys, I guess. Big Niners guys in the end.
Wouldn't they be Eagles fans?
They should be.
You guys need to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, that's very weird. That's
but that was just weird. Crushing. Yeah. And then, I don't know if you guys saw, sorry, I'm still recovering.
No, let it out. This is the place.
This is very, very cathartic for me. So I think it was at the Niners-Packers game. They panned to Rob Lowe in the stands.
Yeah. Yes. Wearing the NFL hat.
He's wearing an NFL hat and just like a black
parka. I want to get one that has the refs.
Team NFL. Yeah, well, Barstool tweeted out for like Rob Lowe, huge NFL guy or something like that. Yeah. And then Rob Lowe retweeted it and he was like, I guess this is the big story of the game. Like,
His sons are big stoolies. They're friends with the Pardon My Take guys. So they have a direct line.
Oh, really? Well,
it was
like
funny.
That Rob Lowe understood like
that
was a joke.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but you know what? When you're Rob Lowe and you look like that, I just wouldn't care about anything that anybody has to say because I'm just like, I'm Rob Lowe.
Dude looks
good.
Dude looks good.
And look like that.
Yeah.
My God.
He's the Jimmy Garoppolo of Hollywood.
Seriously. Yeah. And everything you hear about him is that he's actually a genuinely nice guy. And every interaction that Barstool's had with him has been positive. So,
which I could see him like preparing for the game and be like, you know what? I'll wear an NFL hat just to support all the teams.
Right. I hope everyone
like
has
totally
fun.
Earnest and
everybody
genuine about the whole thing.
And I wish they would do a reboot with him as Sam Seaborn's running for president.
Yes.
Oh, that'd be nice.
That was discussed at one point with Aaron Sorkin.
Interesting.
Your staff reached out to us to kind of set the stage of why you're in here with us again, hanging out. Your staff reached out and said that you're going to be in New York and you had time to come on the show, so we obviously wanted to have you back. But we were talking before we actually turned the mics on, and we were talking about congressional reform and what the responsibilities for a congressman are whenever you're away from the Capitol. You're up here doing a lot of fundraising, and that seems like what Congress does all the time.
Well, mostly I'm up here. My wife, she's worked here for the last 13 years. She's from De Pere, Wisconsin, and so she's moved back there, but she still has stuff here. And so, and we were also talking about how since we're expecting our first child in June.
Oh, congratulations!
Thank you. We had our initial visit to Bye Bye Baby. We were both just totally helpless.
Especially
like we just
New
wanted
York
to cry.
City prices for baby stuff.
Oh my gosh!
Insane.
And if you're out there, just like I told the congressman, you might want to go to Podfather Show because we just started a reset on that show where we talk about. Just got pregnant, having a baby, going through every single step of the process, and we're doing that on Podfather Show, so make sure you check it out.
But you're just like at such an information disadvantage. These people are like, well, you need the yo-yo travel stroller, and then you need the Bugaboo Vista combined with the Maxi Cozy. I'm like, you're like five grand in already.
Yeah.
Like, I do think this is the fun. So I've only been in politics 3 years, so I've been through two elections and had never run for anything before this. But the demands of fundraising are constant. They get worse, I think, with every election cycle. Mm-hmm. Even if you control for inflation, the average cost of a congressional race has gone up and up and up since the 1970s. And as we were talking about before, the real downside of that is not it doesn't corrupt the system in the sense of people aren't, you know, bribing members of Congress so that they change their vote, you know, vote for this particular special interest or whatnot. Although a little bit of that does happen.
Yeah.
It's more that it takes up so much of your time that it's impossible to devote the time you need to the actual art of legislating and doing oversight of the executive branch. And indeed, all the incentives are there pointing you in the direction of just raising money and raising more money after that, as opposed to focusing on legislating. And I think that's why you see so many members of Congress spend so much of their time trying to be kind of C-list media celebrities as opposed to actual legislators, because the system has changed in such a way as to incentivize them to do that. Like, they're actually acting rationally in that regard. And so I would admit to you that I think campaign finance reform is one of the most complex areas of law. If you study this issue, every time we've tried to do something about it, we've actually unleashed second and third order consequences we didn't anticipate. So think, for example, the simple fact that we have limits on what you can give a congressional candidate. Mm-hmm. It's right capped at $2,800, primary general, $5,600, $11,200 for total, primary and general for a couple. So that makes some sense, right? You don't want a billionaire to be able to just give, you know, $3 million to a candidate right. he likes right. and therefore seal the race. But it just means that a candidate actually has to spend more time raising money because you're raising it from a greater number of people at a lower dollar amount.
Right.
So it's a huge, huge problem. And that doesn't even get into the so-called soft money side of the equation, the super PACs and things that aren't part of official campaigns. So you basically have a situation now where candidates, particularly statewide candidates for senator or governor, are able to – they don't technically coordinate with super PACs, but super PACs do their dirty work for them. They run all the attack ads for them, and they can just kind of wash their hands and say, well, it's not my money. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But really, I mean, it's all the same people, right? That it's a really problematic system. I've spent a lot of time on congressional reform. I think there are some things upstream of the actual raising of money that we can change the incentives, but – I mean, you just do feel like you're in quicksand all the time.
I know how you feel because in 1996,
I love where this is going. No matter
I was
what
a Girl Scout and I had to sell cookies for my troop, and it was—I still remember the stress of that. So totally.
Well, at least
totally
when someone gave you money, they got cookies in return.
True. Yes.
For this, it's like they'll get part of running an ad in Northeast Wisconsin.
And I imagine you have like blue-haired women and men that are there, be like. Well, Mike, I gave you $2,800 last year, and I haven't seen anything happen by the intersection of my home. Yeah.
That sounds like the creepy old guy from Family Guy.
Go in that person's basement.
Popsicles in the cellar. Will you pull one of your cream hamstrings?
One idea that I'm intrigued by. So you can imagine a time limit on fundraising, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't fundraise 6 months. Take the election day. 6 months out, that's all the time window you're allowed to raise money in. The only problem with that is it would advantage incumbents even more than they're already advantaged. And incumbents are insanely advantaged. European monarchies turn over less than incumbents do. but I think the time limit would make some sense. You could have a geographic limit. In other words, you're only able to donate to candidates that actually represent you or are seeking to represent you, although there may be First Amendment concerns with that, and you run into all sorts of devils in the details. On the soft money side, I would be in favor of a full – if you can't limit super PAC donations, and I think there is a good argument that you can't, at least have full transparency, right? So if you're going to put $1 million in a super PAC – and run ads saying, Mike Gallagher hates puppies, don't vote for Mike Gallagher. It wouldn't be
that would be heard that devastating.
Yeah.
Are you on the record saying that?
It would be like, Mike Gallagher hates Aaron Rodgers. Don't vote for him. Yeah. I love Aaron Rodgers.
That's the clip
we
use. Mike Gallagher hates puppies. Yeah. Yeah. That'll be it.
But if someone did that, it would be like Americans for Puppies. And you'd have no idea who the actual funder was.
And it'd be like, Americans for Puppies.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. I'd be curious, and this is something I struggle with in my first campaign, since you're all veterans. In a campaign, your identity gets reduced to one thing.
Right.
And for me, it's like, I'm a Marine, right? And that's, it conveys something genuine, which is like, this is about service. Theoretically, I like the idea of military veterans, both Democrats and Republicans, running for office because, they can work together, get difficult stuff done, et cetera, et cetera. And we got a lot of great candidates on both sides of the aisle running. But I wonder if we're like dangerously close to going overboard with all this, right? It's like,
possibly.
Yeah. Right? I don't know if you guys have talked about this.
I see now on like, call it like vet Twitter and mil Twitter and on military social media channels, a lot of times now it's the ad for so-and-so in Iowa who's like in his uniform doing this and that, and everybody in the military community is like rolling their eyes at it. They're like, get it, bro, okay. But at the same time, it does strike a chord with the civilian population who's like, that's fucking awesome.
Right, but I also think it reduces down who each individual is, and it just says, oh, well, they're a veteran, so they have all of these qualities, and I don't know anything about them, but he's a veteran, so he must have all of these qualities, which I don't think is true all the time.
Totally, and we can't – I mean, I think the promise of electing veterans to office is not just that they're going to put the country first and work together and, try and get Congress working again, but theoretically, they should be best positioned to – stand up to the military itself. Yeah. And as anyone who's served in the military knows, it is a highly imperfect organization filled with a lot of status quo-minded people that are either collecting a paycheck sometimes or don't have the best interest of everybody at heart. And so we need to reform the military. We've seen high-profile scandals with the VA, right, which have consumed our politics, where theoretically veterans in office would be best positioned to say, this is crap. Like, this is not acceptable.
We
need to fire people that aren't performing, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
don't know. How we go down this
That's
tangent?
Crazy.
I love
Aaron
Rodgers.
Well, just talking about soul sucking, asking people for money is.
That's true.
Americans are for puppies, though, right? We're
That's
all
true.
On the same team.
And the Green Bay Packers.
And the.
Everyone Ooh. Loves the Packers. Ooh. I would say, so just the last Packer thing I'd say, a buddy of mine was the wide receivers coach a few years ago. And so I got a little bit of an insight into the organization. Not much, though. But it was funny. Like, all right, so. I'm in politics, so I get hammered all the time. I mean, I could tweet out, I love puppies, and all the comments would be, you know,
puppies go poop,
and that contributes to global warming. Right. You're evil globalists. Like, yeah. But like, that is just a fraction of what your, like, lowest-level coach on the Green Bay Packers organization gets in terms of scrutiny.
Oh,
like,
oh dude. Yeah,
there are so many journalists covering every aspect of the Packers organization, and not paying attention to what I'm doing. So I have enormous sympathy for everybody today that's getting hammered in the Green Bay Packers organization. I think we actually outperformed this season relative to what we were supposed to do, but we'll see.
I have a final question on that. Sorry. It sounds like, for me and like the life I live, that sounds like a nightmare to me. Having to, one, you're under so much scrutiny all the time in public office. Two, like you said, you can't make a move without people being all over you. I know this pain because a stranger said I have old man hands on Instagram the other day.
That's brutal,
still reeling
yeah.
from it.
That's definitely brutal.
But I know.
How would he see a picture
and
of your hands?
The fundraising and all this stuff, and you have so much pressure on you. What makes it worth it for you? You said you're going into your third term.
Yeah.
What makes it worth it for you to keep doing this?
I'd say two things. One, you really do you get a window into your hometown and the area you grew up in that you would never get otherwise, right? Because, you know, I don't know where you guys are from, but you know, let's say you live back there as opposed to Manhattan. Mm-hmm. You work for whatever. On your daily commute, you would pass any number of nondescript gray buildings, and you'd never stop to think, like, what's going on inside there, right? Mm-hmm. Was that a manufacturing company? Is that a nonprofit? And so in this job, I get to go all around Northeast Wisconsin, and I get to meet so many people that just blow you away. And, like, renew your faith in why America is the greatest country in the history of the world, right? And it's not because of what's going on in D.C. It's what's happening at the local level. And there's so many awesome people that I never would have met otherwise. And so to represent my hometown, represent my home area is awesome. And I learn a ton from it. Secondly, well, related, I think it puts you outside your comfort zone. But for me, you know, I had tried to build a career both in uniform and out of uniform as a national security professional, whatever mm-hmm. that means. But I wanted to work on national security issues.
Right.
You know, had gone to school for that, had, you know, served in the military doing that. Now I get to do that from a different perspective, from a legislative perspective. And whether it's on the Armed Services Committee, which is one of the – it's like the exception that proves the rule in Congress in terms mm-hmm. of we work together. We have, you know, sometimes brutal debates, but – we get legislation passed every year that I think is good and, you know, has the country's best interests at heart. I'm chairing an outside commission on U.S. cyber policy, which is fascinating. And so it's really getting me outside my comfort zone or allowing me to sort of tackle issues that I care about from a different perspective that I enjoy. But I also come into it with, I'm not going to do this for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I, you know, who knows if it'll be 4 years or 10 years, but it's not going to be more than that. So
yeah.
I feel like, you know, I'm playing with house money at this point. It's just a cool way to serve Northeast Wisconsin. And it's been a, you know, it's not something I didn't sit there when I was 16 being like, I want to be president one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So say you're done with your 10 years, the 10 years that you see, you leave. What's the one legacy that you want to leave behind? If you have one baby to work on, what's that baby?
So I would
your actual baby.
I'm gonna split the baby into and do two things in classic political fashion.
Yeah.
So are you a new father or are you?
No, I've been a dad for 14 years.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. So how many kids do you have?
Two.
Okay.
I have two daughters, 14 and 7.
So I assume this answer is going to change when I have my wife has a kid at the end of June. But for now.
That's already good because so many ladies out there now hate it whenever you say, we're having a baby.
I hate that.
She's having a baby.
I hate
You're
that.
You're there in the room.
It's so pretend. I mean,
it is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I participated.
Oh, are you both having a baby?
That's like a fucking battalion commander taking credit for something that a single fire team did.
That's right.
Like, you didn't do it, you bitch. You weren't even in the room.
Yeah. That's like every Navy SEAL writing a book saying they killed Bin Laden.
Yeah.
But I digress. I think I made a cheap shot at the Navy SEALs last time I did your podcast.
That's okay.
Crenshaw, I love you. Scott Taylor, I love you. You're good guys. Jocko Willink seems like a badass guy.
He'll actually be on Friday.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I love his stuff.
Yeah.
He's great, man.
I don't wake up till around 10 every day, so hopefully we get
you
along.
You should start an Instagram where you just post.
Yeah, like, that was our idea of how to announce it. We were going to take a picture of a time mix at like 10:45 and be like up early to prepare for tomorrow's interview.
Yeah.
So there are, just to quickly answer your question, there are two issues which I consume most of my limited brain power every day. One is I do think there is a reorientation of U.S. grand strategy and foreign policy going on centered around how do we confront the threat posed by China in general and the Chinese Communist Party's sort of infiltration of the digital economy in particular.
TikTok, and, man, it's coming for us.
Yeah, that's right.
It's crazy.
Well, the military outlawed TikTok.
We love TikTok because it gives us a lot of content. Like nobody ever has. It gives us so much free content.
I'm not on TikTok. I don't really even know
you probably shouldn't be.
Just follow us on Instagram and we'll give you the best ones.
Yeah, we'll show you the best ones.
But it's like dumb Lance Corporal.
Oh,
like,
my God,
just
yeah.
Doing
just chock full of
their service.
If you want to say, what is Lance Corporal's like, you just be like, here you go.
Look at
TikTok. Hashtag boot life on TikTok.
Yeah.
Boot life. So there's a lot of issues in that area, but I actually think regardless of who wins the presidency in 2020, I think this is gonna be the new consensus position, and I think we're at a position similar to where we were in the late 40s, early 50s, vis-a-vis the Soviet Union with China, and that's an interesting problem that I work a lot on in Congress, and it doesn't like get me a lot of press, but it's cool stuff and it's important stuff, and I love that. The second thing domestically is, we are spending most of our money on healthcare, and we're not necessarily getting a better outcome for the money that we're spending. And so I think the key to unlocking all this, and it's not a left or a right thing, is radical transparency in healthcare pricing. And I have a lot of bipartisan bills in that space. The Trump administration actually has some good executive orders in that space. And I think if we ever want to have enough money to fund all the things we like, right, whether it's more INF non-compliant missiles for the Army and the Marine Corps, or it's Meals on Wheels, or it's new roads and bridges, we have to find a way to control healthcare costs. And until we do that, everything else is a rounding error. And so those are the two things that I hope to have some small impact on. And then I can go back to Wisconsin and, I don't know, be an assistant coach for the Packers.
There you go. I like
lovely.
It.
I should be a water boy. Yeah.
So how do we get – so there was a news story that came out. Kate, what was the news story about the cybersecurity threats?
So it's going to be round number two today. We'll bump it up to round number one. So this story comes to us from Haley Britsky at Task and Purpose. As if having a loved one deployed overseas isn't enough, family members of soldiers deployed with 82nd Airborne are being warned of menacing messages they might receive on social media and are being encouraged to report any they see. These messages are being sent to troops and family members of troops deployed to the Middle East earlier this month in response to the increased tensions with Iran. One message calls for troops to leave the region if you want to see your family again.
Interesting.
Go back to your country. You and your terrorist clown president brought nothing but terrorism, the message sent over an Instagram account using the photo of now-deceased Iranian commander Soleimani said. You fools underestimate the power of Iran. The recent attack on your expletive, I'm going to say, probably duty balls is the word he used there, bases, was just a little taste of our power. By killing our general, you dug your own grave. Before having more dead bodies, just leave the region for good and never look back. Now, I can see us rolling our eyes at it, but I can see like a wife or husband at home who has a spouse overseas getting that message and being like, like
that's
a little shaken
scary.
By it.
Yeah.
First of all, very scary that the ghost of Soleimani is on Instagram now. Mm. Like, now we have ghosts. With Instagram as the biggest issue at hand here. But families are now getting reports of fake scenarios about kidnappings, a bunch of phishing attempts. And it's because, and this to me is a huge deal, the MWR network there, which stands for Army's Morale, Welfare, and Recreation Program, was hacked. So all the contacts were obtained of like all these family members of the deployed troops. So now they're getting all these messages. So it's
via Instagram, beginning the messages or just getting like emails or
social media of family members. I guess the MWRs where like these troops are going in there to talk to their families back home. Whatever computers and stuff they're using there got hacked. So all the connections to like the people they're talking to back home and stuff are now whoever these hackers are. They have this information and they're sending scary messages and this and that. So
I don't think I set foot in an MWR. Facility
really?
In my 7 years.
Oh, really? Man.
How is that possible?
Yeah.
Even deployed?
Well, I guess deployed, right? That's
well,
where my first deployment, we didn't
phones,
have.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys get the fancy sat phone.
Yeah, I was smoking cigars while talking on a sat phone.
Yeah.
You and me
that
both.
Was the way to go. God, and the steaming hot MWR with the wood
and Kate's
panels
in there
and the tiny
stirring shit
stirring
in a bucket.
Shit. Yeah, it was just the worst. But a lot of stuff like that, and more we're seeing stories like that. And I know, like, phishing and hacking and stuff isn't what you're focused on. You're focused more on. But, I mean, like you said, more and more, even though it doesn't get all the press, I feel like the direction we are going in is our online capabilities and all this. You know, I'm an idiot when it comes to this stuff. I'm like, you know, those wires with the internet's coming out of it. That's a big deal. And
yeah,
it's coming
on. Struggling hooking up a fire stick. The other
day. But like, where do you see us going? Like, what, like, in terms of, because I know we're even creating new branches where it's like solely focused.
Well, yeah, the Army now has a cyber branch.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
What's the biggest focus? Like you said, you're talking about China. And will that be the real war? Like, that will be the Cold War, will be online kind of thing? Like, do I sound like an idiot saying that?
No, not at all. So I'd say a few things. One, let me just stipulate that I don't know if you guys talked about it on the podcast, but I actually have been incredibly supportive of taking out Soleimani. I thought it was a masterstroke. And I think has reestablished some level of deterrence with Iran, although things are very unpredictable. But Iran's in an increasingly weak position, both not only within Iran itself, where there's been protests for the last 2 years, but across the region. I mean, we've had anti-Iranian protests in Lebanon, within Iraq itself, and that story has kind of been lost in the media sort of attempt, I think, to posit that this is going to lead to World War III, and I just don't think that's accurate. So that's my bias. I'm in favor of
killing
Soleimani.
So as somebody who's on the House Arms Committee, whenever this story comes down, you as a member of Congress, are you like, I kind of wish we had a little bit more know about what was going on? Where do you fall in line of that Congress needs to take back some of the war powers?
Yeah. So I think the best way to do this would be to I think we should repeal simultaneously not only the 2002 authorization for the use of military force, mm-hmm. which this was the Obama administration's justification for going back into Iraq after it had mm-hmm. precipitously pulled troops out of Iraq.
Yeah, everybody's using it fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Well, that is true. I mean, Republican or Democrat, presidents tend, once they get in office, to expand their interpretation of executive power, right? Mm-hmm. Where you stand depends on where you sit. And that's been consistent with Obama and
like
Trump.
And I used to hate that whenever people would say, well, Obama did this, Bush did this. If you took and just looked at bullet points of what Obama and Bush did foreign policy-wise, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah. No, certainly Obama, like, used executive authority combined with a couple outdated AUMFs to kill a lot of terrorists around the world. So you could repeal that. Also, you could do some basic hygiene of repealing the 1991 AUMF, which is still on the books, as well as the 1957 AUMF, which is still on the books.
My personal favorite.
That's
Eisenhower, baby.
Big 57.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with Eisenhower.
Oh, what a man he was.
Great man.
He passed?
Yeah, he passed away. Yes,
no longer with us.
Hate to be the one to break the news to you.
I remember that.
Yeah, that's rough.
So that would actually our troops would still be able to partner with the Iraqi security forces under the authority given to them by not only the 2001 AUMF, which is the primary authority that we use to go after Al Qaeda and its associated forces. Now, there's some debate as to whether that covers a group like ISIS, which in 2014, I believe, was officially excommunicated from Al Qaeda. So I think you'd simultaneously have to revise the 2001 AUMF in order to explicitly say this gives us authority to go after Al Qaeda, Al Shabaab, ISIS, etc. But also, I would be willing to put a 5-year sunset in the 2001 AUMF with the goal of forcing a future Congress to have to revisit that and also revisit, by extension, the entire war on terrorism. Say, okay, how are we doing? Is Congress getting the necessary information it needs to understand that, oh, wait, why are our troops in Nigeria or wherever they are? I mean, I think what's gotten less attention is that al-Shabaab militants killed three mm-hmm. Americans in almost the same week. And they disabled, by the way, a ton of high-priced aircraft. And we are on the wrong side of that cost curve. Our bases are increasingly vulnerable all over the Middle East and even more vulnerable in Indo-PACOM where you know, China's missiles won't fail if they decide to strike us, et cetera. So I actually think there is room for a little give and take on both sides that involves repealing unnecessary AUMFs, revising the 2001 AUMF. But the hardest part of this is the War Powers Resolution, which was passed over Nixon's veto in 73 or 74, check me on that, has completely failed to do what it was intended to do. And it was a noble intention, right? It was to get Congress back into the game when it comes to war powers. But there's only been one instance where a war powers notification has resulted in withdrawal of troops, and that was in the Mayaguez crisis. And other than that, every president has found a creative way to get around the war powers notification. So I think we actually have to take a step back and look at the war powers resolution and why it has failed. Senator Kaine and Senator Young actually have a good sort of debate on this. And so in an ideal world, that's what we would do. Three things: repeal the unnecessary AMFs, revise 2001 AMF, and then revise the entire War Powers Resolution construct. And I think that would get Congress back in the game while also giving the executive branch the freedom of maneuver it needs to take out bad guys.
Unbelievably, that's the exact same thing I was going
to
say.
I swear to God, I was literally thinking the same thing. I was thinking the exact
It's a really interesting issue. By the way, the guy who was the lead House proponent for the War Powers Resolution was a Wisconsin congressman named Clement Zablocki. And you can go back and he wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post, you know, criticizing the Reagan administration for some of its lawless deployments and its, you know, legal reasoning. And that op-ed could work today. So this is not a new debate, and there's no easy answer. I'm not trying to suggest to you there is, but that would be – I think that's kind of the Goldilocks grand bargain in the middle.
And I want to go back to why you're in New York. Is a sneaky real reason why? Because you just don't want to be during in D.C. during the impeachment stuff?
No, well, we're not in session this week. I think the Senate is. It is interesting. I mean, I got married in September. My wife is amazing. She's been a successful Broadway actress in New York. But you know, she's a DePere native.
What's your favorite show that she was in?
She was in Chicago for 2 years. Yeah, she's great. I didn't see her when she did it on Broadway. I saw a regional production of it, but she's done a lot of different stuff. So it's been fun. I mean, it's funny. You know, for those who don't know, I'm a Republican congressman. Mm-hmm. I would say the center of gravity in the Broadway community is not at all. But her friends are awesome, and it's been fun.
Republicans love the arts.
That's right.
Yeah, isn't that a big thing?
Yeah. You asked me what makes this worthwhile. It gives me an opportunity to sort of to dance and express.
You guys dance together sometimes?
I try to, but she actually has talent. But the dance floor at our wedding was very intimidating. Because,
oh my goodness! I can only imagine.
It was on fire.
I imagine is a real pain too.
Yeah. Oh. And then my college buddies were like, they rose up to the challenge a little bit, and they didn't want to be totally upstage. So while they cannot dance well, they dance very hard.
Right. Very aggressively.
Yeah.
That's
good.
More my style. Yeah.
And more aggressively as the night wore on.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
more
yeah.
beers drank.
Totally.
All right, Congressman. Appreciate you stopping by.
Oh, is that it? Wow, that was quick. That's my gosh. It, yeah. I feel like I just talked too much.
No. Oh
no,
my God,
no, that was perfect.
Well, I'm going to check out this parenting podcast. And tell Jocko I'm sorry about that Navy SEAL joke. And tell Aaron Rodgers that I still want to hang out with them.
He's our first download. Jocko's our first download every Tuesday and Friday. He does it at like 4:15. It's unbelievable. That's what the actual picture's for. He's like, I'm here downloading
ZBT.
He's
waking up to download our podcast.
Again, to the congressman for coming on the show. We want to remind you again, all of our ZBT merch has been updated in the store. Go to store.barstoolsports.com to check it all out, because it helps us help you do all those different things. There's lots of great merch coming out. If you are a 49ers fan, or if you are a Chiefs fan, there's going to be Super Bowl or big game, I guess we should say. Big
game. Yeah.
Try not to get canceled over here.
Yeah, big game merch all in the place, so make sure you go to Barstool Sports Store to check it all out, buy those things, and help us out as well. Now let's get into the interview where we talk about the war on drugs. Here's round number three.
As you may have seen, a new online petition went out this week asking President Donald Trump to sign an executive order creating a War on Drugs Service Medal. The petition would create a total force award to recognize active duty, reserve, guard, auxiliary, and state service members who fought in the war on drugs anytime from June 18, 1971 to present. As of last Thursday afternoon, only two people had signed the We Are the People petition, but it's gaining a little bit of steam, and we have the creator, Thomas Marriott, on the horn with us right now. Thomas, thank you for joining.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm that guy, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here. I'm not sure that I'm the right messenger, and I'm definitely not an expert on the war on drugs, but I'm more than happy to kind of share my journey and the story and some of the things that I've observed over the last few years.
Yeah. So what got you involved in this messaging and this cause? What was the onus for you?
The initial genesis was kind of unwittingly, the war on drugs had a kind of a big impact on my life when I was a kid. My father was in the 82nd Airborne. And when I was 4 years old, over Christmas is when they were deployed for Operation Just Cause, which is considered kind of the largest combat operation in war on drugs history, when we invaded Panama and toppled the regime there, et cetera. And so kind of some of my earliest memories were from that time. I remember there was a big snowstorm in Fort Bragg at the time and looking out the window, you know, wondering if my dad was going to come back and all that kind of stuff. And so as I got older and got more interested in history and military history, et cetera, I started doing more research just about Operation Just Cause itself. It's you know, was this super successful but very short combat operation that, you know, is relatively looked over in the annals of U.S. military history. And so as I started digging into it in 2015, it kind of just opened the door to the whole war on drugs history itself. And I just, you know, as I continued to read more and more and more, it was surprising to me how many combat operations there has been and how little coverage, you know, that it has received. And that kind of continued to just like build on itself. And at some point I just thought, hey, you know, it's really interesting that there's just not a lot of recognition for the duty and the sacrifice that has happened in the war. And so I decided to kind of lead this initiative because nobody else was doing it.
And taking that step and whenever you're doing it and you're putting it out there that you want to have it, whenever you see guys like me who write an article making fun of it, essentially like this is bullshit, we shouldn't be doing this. Do you I want to give you the opportunity first to tell me to go fuck myself. and secondly, did you expect that, knowing and reading up about the military, the history, did you expect those types of blogs to come out, that type of opinion?
Oh, of course, of course. I mean, first off, I'm familiar with you guys. You know, I'm a fan. You know, I follow all the memes online. Of course, you know, I was just having this conversation with James over at Task and Purpose, which is, you know, it's like the ultimate perfect storm, right? You have internet culture, which is kind of, you know, its own cynicism, and I don't give a fuck about anything. And then you've got military culture, which is, you know, kind of similar. And then you've got pop culture. And for, you know, obviously, especially the millennial generation, you know, we grew up with movies like Half-Baked and Pineapple Express. And so when most people think about the war on drugs and they think about drugs in general, it's, you know, just a bunch of bros smoking pot. It's all harmless, that kind of stuff. And so, I knew that I was going to basically trigger everyone. I was hoping I would break the internet a little bit more for the sake of the petition. But, I get it that I'm that guy, and so I was ready for the trolling.
But I'm reading, and I think it is interesting. And like you said, I do like that you're starting this conversation about the war on drugs, because reading the things here, more than 250,000 service members have served in the, like, in, I put it in quotes, the war on drugs since President Nixon. And then it's cost more than $1 trillion with a T and killed or wounded at least 5,000 Americans. And as you noted, it has killed more American civilians via overdose than civilian casualties of the War on Terror, World War One, World War Two, all these things. So I think it brings up a much larger and more important conversation. We're so worried about terrorists and this and that when really, like, drugs are killing far more Americans, like looking at the meth and heroin epidemics right now and all that stuff. Like, great conversation. But I felt a little torn as somebody, because I saw the medal, and the design for the medal on the one side is a troop going through the poppy fields in Helmand Province, right? It's like the where they, you know, make the heroin and everything. I was one of those troops. At the same time, old gal has dabbled in a little bit of drugs myself. Maybe a little LSD, mushrooms, cocaine. Maybe a couple of Molly's, ecstasy, marijuana, alcohol, prescription pill abuse, anabolic steroids, DMT, cat, all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways, the steroids were to get ready for a PFT, by the way. That was only to get ready for it. But no, I haven't done all this, but I have dabbled in drugs. Like, so it is this juxtaposition.
What
are we doing?
Yeah, what? Like, where are you going with this?
I'm just saying, this metal, this metal, I feel like I could wear it, but also I'd be a little bit of a traitor.
Right, and I'll say.
A bit of a hypocrite.
I'll say, I wrote this blog making fun of the metal itself. And when Tim reached out to me and he said, check out this video, it's about Delta. You know, whenever you're thinking the war on drugs, you're thinking of little Nancy Reagan
sitting
in a wooden chair wearing her DARE shirt. You're not thinking of combat operations that are happening deep inside the jungle and being very dangerous. And that's kind of the point you want to make, right?
Yeah, of course. First, before we move on to that, my big question is, what did you score on the APFT after you juiced?
285. I don't like to brag. I was crushing it. Speed demon. It was worth the hair on my chest and the lack of tits. It really came through. Sorry.
No, but I mean, it chaps, in your defense, you know, that was the thing. I actually, you know, I appreciated, you know, you were considering the nature of all of your posts. You were actually pretty objective on it. At the very bottom, you'd put, you know, this is all qualified based on, you know, people that have done actual combat operations. You know, obviously, the war itself has been going on for 48 years. It's spanned, you know, six different administrations, all types of different policy all over the place. You know, in the late 80s and 90s is when we really ramped up things down in South America, which is kind of what you were indicating. And of course, we're still down there doing things. But because we crushed the Medellin cartel, most of it has moved up into the Golden Triangle in Mexico. And so there's not as many combat operations there. But, you know, movies like that I'm sure you're familiar with, like Clear and Present Danger, kind of, you know, at the time during the 90s reflected some of those, you know, black ops kind of things off the radar. But that was the kind of the point in the narrative that I was really wanting to highlight is I cannot tell you guys unexpectedly how many emails I've received over the last few years of random vets reaching out to me saying, hey, you know, I was in the war on drugs. I can't tell you when or where, you know, but I really appreciate what you're doing and highlighting, bringing attention to this. I had one guy who, you know, took a shot in the face, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I totally get it. It's really easy to think about, you know, just some guys down on the border eating Snickers, you know, all that kind of stuff.
And I did not expect you to be your age that you are. You're a young guy. You're probably in your 20s still. I expected you to look like you were 58 years old and you Skyping in from a Cracker Barrel.
I was totally shocked. I'm not going to lie. I thought he was going to be like, Deb, come over here. I can't find this.
I can't get the internet going. I can't get the internet going.
But Thomas, I mean, you think about the war on drugs and it's involved a lot more than just the military. And I'm sure, you know, you just mentioned these people that can't even tell you what they did or who they were working with. What do you say to the people that say this is way too abstract of a conflict to start handing out medals to everybody that touched it, even in the smallest way?
Yeah, I totally get that. And it is really hard. I think, you know, and I purposely kind of cast a really wide net. If you look like on the homepage, what I describe as the qualification for it, I literally cast the widest net possible of anybody that's touched it. And the real reason for that was so that I could touch as many people as possible and get the conversation going and bring attention to it. I mean, ultimately, the DOD and the Pentagon, the U.S. Army Heraldry Institute, all of those guys will ultimately determine who qualifies and under what conditions and whatnot. And I'm totally okay with that. And I'm honestly totally okay if they don't use the design. I have to say to Chaps, like the trolling didn't hurt me, but it crushed my heart when you shit on the design.
Oh, man.
Well, buddy, I mean, you put white on a medal, you got to know that I'm going to be drinking heavy, full-body reds. I mean, yeah. I'll have to buy a new one every time I go.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want that. You just have a straight-up black one. Or make, you know, instead of having, if you did it, like two or three deployments, instead of a gold Oakley cluster, maybe you put on like a marijuana leaf.
A little marijuana
leaf.
Like
your second tour.
Right.
Like I would like that type of thing as well.
Yeah, I get it. Well, the big thing was on the design itself for the medal. And I'd like to take a quick second and kind of talk about what went into that. So the kind of approach that we took, if you look at all modern medals, they're really based on more of kind of this symbolic abstraction. You know, it's like, oh, we're fighting in the Middle East. Let's put a scorpion on there. It's like, it's almost like the Heraldry Institute of the Army is using clip art to design these things.
Right. Probably true.
So, like, you know, they kind of use, but some of the medals that I really like growing up, you know, my grandparents fought in World War II, of course. And so I, you know, when I was young, I was always looking at the European and Pacific campaign medals. And, you know, they had these kind of cool scenes that depicted the deal there. And so that was the kind of direction I wanted to take, was a scene that really, you know, kind of embodied what the war on drugs was. And then it became really, really difficult because it's 48 years in running and there's all kinds of different scenarios in the jungle. We got the Middle East, we've got Southeast Asia, you know, predominantly a lot of activity on the oceans with the Coast Guard. And of course the Coast Guard has probably had the highest level of service and impact on it.
Oh yeah.
And so it was, do we optimize for the sacrifice or do we optimize for the duty? And ultimately, I went for optimizing for the sacrifice because of the casualties that have been inflicted in Helmand and Kandahar, et cetera. And so that was the approach that we took. And I was thinking, finally, for once, somebody gives some attention to the Marines, they'd be happy. But, you know, they're just shit all over it. So.
Well, I'm glad that you came on. You knew that I had made fun of it, and you still had the courage to come on the show. So kudos to you for that. We appreciate you taking the time out.
And I think it's an important thing to now that I hear, because I was definitely on the side of like, oh, okay. But now, like, here, you know, I'm like, this is an important conversation to be having. This is like a very...
You feel bad about your drug use now?
No, I still will continue to use, but I still, I think it is a really important conversation. I have something pretty interesting to think about. So yeah, pretty cool.
Thomas, we thank you for your time, man. We appreciate it.
You, Thomas. Cool. Thanks for being a good sport. Thanks.
Good sport.
He is a good sport. He is a good sport.
Yeah, he is a good sport. And who's not a good sport, Kate? Those Canadians.
Oh,
well,
boy.
They probably are.
They're fantastic sports. My goodness. What? What? In what world? What are you talking to?
That's the most offended you've been in
the podcast
in a while.
I love my Canadians, man.
I do too.
I've never been to Canada, but I just want to, if I had a baby Bjorn on, I just want to put them all in it.
All of them?
Every single one of them. Anyways, so from ABC News, Newfoundland, more than just a dog. I didn't know that. So I've learned
that. Is it Newfoundland or Newfoundland?
Newfoundland.
Oh, pardon me.
Newfound pronunciation.
Hot start for old Cateroons. Newfoundland's premier.
Finland. Newfoundland.
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 Newfin. Like, we're just goofing. We're newfin. Okay. Newfins. We're newfin goofing. Newfoundland's. Fuck. Premier asked for the Canadian military's help Saturday as residents of the province's capital struggled to tunnel out from homes buried by the heaviest snowfall ever recorded in St. John's in that province. Premier Dwight Ball. What a name. Dwight Ball.
You start off so hot with Premier, but then you go Dwight Ball.
Premier Dwight Ball said that he asked for the federal government's assistance, including mobilizing the armed forces after the blizzard battered eastern Newfoundland. They experienced a one-day snowfall of 30 inches, and that doesn't seem like too much.
No, it's not.
If you consider wind drifts, it's a ton. I watched sped-up videos where entire cars and homes were swallowed up
that
in
was
like
crazy.
A matter
of
hours.
Too, yeah.
People were reporting up to 8 or 9 feet in their yards alone.
There are some videos that were floating around of people that had their garages, because, you know, like the garage could act like a barrier. They're opening up their automatic garages, and the entire two-car garage was all the way up to the roof of
which
snow.
Which is, you know, 8 feet or so.
So I don't know, what do you do? Like, I'm from the South. I've lived in places that has a little bit of snow. When you have that amount of snow, what do you do?
And they said winds were getting up to 98 miles an hour.
Like, seriously,
that's crazy.
98 miles an hour.
With your car completely covered, your yard covered, where does it go?
It's you just got to wait it out, really. You can't do anything about it.
At the peak of the storm, which some described as more of a hurricane, snowplows were pulled off the roads, and then a neighborhood was hit by an avalanche at the height of the storm Friday night. That's how much snow there was. So the Minister of Natural Resources, Seamus O'Regan.
That's a good name.
Dwight Ball and Seamus O'Regan, man. Forget it.
Seamus O'Regan.
Oh, Seamus O'Regan from Newfoundland.
We got a lot of snow here.
Oh, Kate here. We got a lot. Harry, Hermione, grab your wands. We got a lot of snow. Said Minister Seamus O'Regan.
Where is that gentleman
said the
from?
Federal government. The wheels on this show have just rolled off into the sea.
It's fine.
We lost them in the snow.
Yeah. Anyways, the federal government was already working to deploy all available resources on the ground. He said that the federal government was still working out exactly how the military would be able to help, which also the town has no power. So like you said, what do? They don't know.
The snow.
They're bringing in. It's like grab your shovels, fire blow torches, mop the snow, brasso the snow, do push-ups in the snow. What
follow
do you do?
It,
yeah, I'll follow it. Thank you. But, I mean, what do they do? You're like a PFC and you get called to snow duty. That's going to be a long.
That's what you got to expect, though, in Canada.
Do you even begin?
If you're in the Canadian National Guard, at some point you got to grab a shovel. At some point.
Mm-hmm. I need you all to pee a path through this snow. That joke wasn't good.
No, I like it.
Thanks. So,
I want to give a huge shout out to those Canadians because, you know, getting off the bus there in Newfoundland, whenever you're told that this is going to be the job, there's certain jobs that you get in the military that you're just like, fuck, man.
You know what Nancy Reagan would say?
What?
Just say snow.
No.
They'll get a medal for it.
All right, let's move into save rounds, alibis. We'll start with you, Kate.
I'm having a rough day. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know.
You're crushing it.
I'm crushing it. That's it. That's my
round. Another new hairdo.
Another new hairdo. I went blonde again.
Yeah,
it's still orangish. I paid way too much for it, as usual. It's the Brazilian place.
Is this the place you already went one time?
Oh, I've been to this place a bunch now. They're like,
so what is stopping you from maybe going to a new place where you don't get overcharged and you end up with something that you like? I'm saying it looks good, but you clearly are not thrilled with it. So why not go somewhere that you would be thrilled?
Yeah, but they give me like treats.
I think a lot of salons do that. I don't think that's unique to this place.
They walked in with this steaming, piping hot box of like Brazilian dumplings this time with like a spicy chicken in the middle. And they were like, here, they gave me a styrofoam cup full of them. And so
that makes it worth it.
Yeah. Thanks. That's my round. That's me. I'm like legit fall. I am having a day. I'm just old frazzled McGilligan.
Oh, you're doing fantastic. That was a good show. Bren?
I got nothing this week.
Cons?
Old caveat head ass.
No.
Whoa.
Wow.
Oh, no. Wow.
Chaps?
I'm diarrhea free.
Whoa.
That's fun.
He ran and he doesn't have diarrhea.
I know. I'm basically a new man. So I started Vyvanse and some antidepressants recently.
Yeah.
And one of the drawbacks for most people is that it dries you up. Like Vyvanse can cause constipation.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's just causing normal stuff to happen.
Whoa.
That's good.
Yeah.
That was the key.
Yeah. So Vyvanse is helping me out. Yeah.
Everything's coming up,
Jeff. So I encourage people to go out and get their stuff taken care of. Kate, you are soon.
First
Cons, I know
in
you
February.
Do too.
Maybe I won't sound as frazzled starting in February. Maybe I'll be slightly less manic.
Frazzle cast.
Yeah.
Other than that, good show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Ha ha ha. Sounders.